Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Politically Speaking Podcast. I'm your host, Chris McDaniel, a reporter with St. Louis Public Radio. Joining me in studio,
a very weary Jason Rosenbaum.
I think we're all very weary. And
Joe Manis.
And our special guest this week,
Bob Onder.
Yes, we are all very weary, and thank you to everyone for, taking the helm when I was out last
Chris
week.
Chris has a little bit of a beard, so.
sort of apathy, but just going to see where it goes here.
Yes. But we're going to take a little bit of a step back, and we're bringing in the state senator-elect from Western St. Charles County, the winner of the most competitive state Senate primary of the last primary.
And explain why, in effect, he's the senator-elect.
Because there is no Democratic opponent.
In November.
Yes,
and even if there, and to be honest, even if there was, he was probably going to win anyways because it's a very Republican district.
It is about 65% at last check.
But before we get into anything, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, yeah, Jason, I'm a lifelong St. Louisan. I grew up in South St. Louis County in Afton. Went to school all the way through St. Louis University High School, and then I crossed Forest Park to Washington University
undergrad. Another St. Louis University High School grad.
We've had so
well, that's
many.
True.
Chris
that's true.
Coster, there's a number of St. Louis
Speaker
high school
Jones
grads.
Is a. Mm-hmm.
I feel like we've had more guests on the show too who were St. Louis University.
It's just popular school for some reason.
I guess
yeah.
so.
I just wanted to it's segue into that because that means something since it's from both parties.
It's a great place, yeah. And, yeah, I think Mike Doss was a South St. Louis Democrat from SLU High
when I was
in the Missouri House. But, yeah, I crossed Forest Park, went to Washington U as a pre-med student, crossed back again and went to Wash U Medical School. Along the way, I actually got a law degree right here in the in Midtown at St. Louis
right.
U Law School.
Back when you were in the House, then Senator John Loudon said your degrees were something that should be cloned.
He did say that.
Which is ironic because of your position against embryonic stem cell research.
Right. I was the chair of Missourians Against Human Cloning.
But continue.
Yeah. So I've been, but I live, I in 1992, I started in private medical practice, and I'm an allergist in West St. Louis County and St. Peter's. And I live with my wife, Allison, and our six kids in Lake St. Louis. And in 2006, I was elected to this Missouri State House.
What prompted you to get into politics when you've got a law degree and you're a physician?
It seems like it's the wonderful
and
pay.
Six
right?
Kids.
It's the wonderful
it's
pay
the,
in
it's
the
It's the wonderful pay in the legislature. That's right. Well, you know, I've always felt called to public service. I've always been active in political campaigns. So over the years, I've been a supporter of Jim Talent and Mike Gibbons. Once upon a time, was my state senator. Of course, I grew up. I came of age in the Ronald Reagan era. I've always felt called to public service, and I think my somewhat unique background brings something to public life. I think it's good that we have people, especially today, who understand healthcare in the legislature and a thorough knowledge of the law and being able to read bills and understand what we're voting on. What we're amending is a good asset as well in the legislature.
Okay, so go on about your house.
So I spent a short time in the Missouri House. I think a pretty productive time. I passed a major pro-life bill in 2008. It made it through the House, but then didn't make it through the Senate.
Yeah, which bill was that?
And that was that was the big pro-life omnibus bill. I'm blanking on the bill number back then. Yeah, but what did pass and got signed into law by Governor Matt Blunt was House Bill 1549, which was the omnibus immigration bill at the time, Chris Kobach, who was an expert on the subject, now Kansas Secretary of State, said that gave us the second strongest bill in the country to fight illegal immigration.
Yes, I remember that bill well because its passage was kind of in doubt because it was being held up because of the village law controversy. Our older listeners may remember
that.
Yeah,
there wasn't anything pertaining to the village law, but that was something that to some extent weakened our speaker at the time, and I think, it was.
But we don't want to get
into the weeds there, yeah.
But here's what happened was you may have still be a member of the House, but Matt Blunt decided not to run for re-election. The 9th Congressional District opened up, and
because Kenny Holschoff, who was the congressman, decided to run for governor.
Exactly, yeah. And so I, after a lot of reflection and consultation with family and friends, decided to run for Congress. That was the 9th Congressional District.
Which no longer exists,
which
by
no
the
longer
way.
Exists. But and in a 5-person primary, came in second to Blaine Lukemire. And there are no consolation prizes for second place, so I went back to private life and my medical practice.
So what did you learn from that campaign? Because we've talked about this a couple of times, and we've had people on the show who have lost races before but come back and win. It absolutely happened in your case.
Absolutely, yeah. I think I learned a number of things. One is I think that you've got to be really realistic about what your support, what your grassroots support on the ground is. The 9th Congressional District was something like 22 counties. And the victor, Blaine Lukemire, had run in all 22 of those counties before because he had run for treasurer unsuccessfully. I think you have to be realistic about the manpower and the amount of money it's going to take to win that race. And I think really the candidate has to remain engaged and make the big decisions. That's not something that can be delegated. And I think those are all things that we did differently the second time around.
So flash forward to a couple weeks ago, which as we know seems like 20 years ago at this point.
Yeah.
You were engaged in a competitive Senate primary for now former Senator Scott Roop. See, he's still Scott Roop. He's not former Scott Roop.
Right.
It was between you, Representative Chuck Gachenberger, and former Representative Vicky Schneider. It was a very expensive contest.
Yes.
All three candidates put in at least $200,000 of their own money, although I don't know how much money of that Vicky Schneider spent. How did you pull it off?
You know, grassroots, and grassroots. Because as you alluded to, at the end of the day, we all had, well, I raised a little bit more money than my opponents, but we really ran a strong grassroots game for almost a year and a half. When I did enter the race about a year and a half ago, a lot of the grassroots folks in St. Charles County really did rally to my side, folks who might go to Pachyderms Club meetings or Liberty. There's a group called the Liberty Forum, which is a libertarian organization group, oriented group out there. There are several Tea Party patriot type groups. And I was able to get those folks on my side, but not only just on my side, Bob, I'll vote for you, but working for me, knocking doors for me, spreading the word for me, almost from the very beginning. So we knocked on 25,000 doors, and by Election Day, we had identified over 2,000 households where someone was supporting me, which can translate into like 4,000 votes. At the end of the day, I got 14,000 votes. So the grassroots effort was really key. And then when the ads and the mailers start to come out, people relate to the person that they met on their front doorstep. And we ended up, I won with 64% of the vote in a three-way race.
It was not even close.
Yeah.
So now you're going to be kind of in limbo for a while. You're not going to be voting in veto session.
Right.
You're not going to be sworn in until January 2015.
Do you plan on being in Jeff City anyway?
Yeah, I'm going to go down for the veto session.
Okay, so what will you be doing since you're not be voting?
Well, mostly observing and I think trying to get to know and to meet some of my new colleagues. Some of them I know quite well. I served in the Missouri House, for instance, with Pro Tem Tom Dempsey and with Floor Leader Ron Richards and Ed Emery and a number of the other senators. But I just want to, Jimmy Lynn Nasheed, Maria Chappelle Nadal, and I all served together in the Missouri House. So just becoming reacquainted with some of those folks. I'm going to be starting to interview staff. I'm going to be starting to talk to folks about a legislative agenda. So there's a lot to do between now and January. But I am blessed that I already know that I'm going to be sworn in as a senator in January. I don't have a tough general election to contend with.
Will you be lobbying for any of the bills? I mean, obviously not officially, yeah. but unofficially?
Well, not particularly. There are definitely some of the bills that I would like to see the governor overridden on.
Anything particular?
Well, the pro-life bill I would like to
the
see.
The 72-hour waiting
yeah,
bill.
The 72-hour
waiting bill. Can you tell me why bill. You think that's a good idea?
Well, I think that we need to this is a momentous life-ending decision that needs to be made, and I think that that a little bit more time for reflection on that momentous decision is a good idea.
Do you think, though, the critics of it have criticized the lack of a exception for rape or incest? What do you think of that type of argumentation?
Well, again, I don't think the abortion decision should ever be rushed into, regardless of the circumstance of the pregnancy.
Now, some have been, okay, there's been some questions about whether or not the 72-hour waiting period also would apply to, let's say, women who take the morning after pill, or like if they're raped and they can take, you know, the pill right away.
Yeah.
Would that affect that?
My reading of the bill is that it wouldn't. The practice of some emergency rooms of giving morning after pills, I don't believe, because technically that's not an abortion because there's no diagnosed pregnancy. So no, I don't think that would affect that.
Now, the veto session will be happening in the midst of this situation in Ferguson. And obviously, you represent Western St. Louis County, not North St. Louis
County. Or Western St. Charles County. Yeah.
Excuse me. I apologize, Senator-elect Dave Schatz, for also giving your district. But it seems like this has become a national issue. Governor Jane Nixon's leadership has been brought into question. And it's pretty clear to me that when this is all said and done, there could be some state legislative blowback from this, whether it be policing, whether the state changes a bunch of things. I guess, what's your general impression of the situation so far, especially the governor's role and leadership throughout this entire situation?
Right. I am somewhat critical of the governor's leadership on this issue. I tend to agree with the county prosecutor, Bob McCullough, also a Democrat, that it wasn't appropriate to replace the county police with the highway patrol. I don't really believe that the governor has the legal authority to replace the county police with the highway patrol. Of course, if you do need military-level intervention, the governor does have the ability to call out the National Guard, which he did, and I think by the time he did that was the appropriate thing to do. But I'm somewhat critical of the governor in this.
What do you think about the possibility of legislative changes next year in response to this? What are your thoughts on, you know, increasing the prevalence of cameras on police officers, for example, as one thing that the legislature could change?
Well, yeah, I think cameras in police cars are probably a really good idea. If we knew more quickly what the real facts of this case are, it could have perhaps nipped it all in the bud. If it turns out, for instance, that the police officer did act appropriately, I don't know what the facts of the case are, and the U.S. system of criminal justice is quite appropriately slow, methodical, and a suspect is presumed innocent until proven guilty. But yeah, I think technology can help us. I don't think it's a panacea. Mm-hmm. I think certainly if there were a second police officer in the car, that might also have been helpful. But I don't have any specific ideas as to what legislation might be called for. I think part of it will depend on how this all evolves and what the facts of the case are.
Well, some have been calling for having him wear cameras, because I think there was a camera necessarily on the car, but it wasn't where you could see anything. So, I mean, from this instance. So,
might
the legislature do something about that or seek grants? I'm just asking.
I think we'll have to look at that. I think we'll have to look at that. I think it's a possibility.
Just more generally, though, yeah. I mean, Jay Nixon, the governor, doesn't have a super great relationship with the Republicans in the legislature to begin with.
That's an understatement.
I think that's an understatement.
Yes.
And I'm pretty sure that there are going to be some Democratic members who are not particularly happy with his performance. There are probably some that are. It depends
that's
on who
true.
They are. So do you think this is going to make it harder for him to pursue an agenda or convince people to, you know, not override his vetoes? What do you think the impact on his basic power over the legislature is going to be from this situation?
Well, yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head, Jason. I think that the governor has not had much support among Republicans to begin with, but I think he's further, both on this issue and the education issue, eroded his influence and his relationship with some of the Democrats, and specifically some of the St. Louis City Democrats. So, I think it's not good for the governor.
And let's kind of transition into the education.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the school transfer issue did affect St. Charles.
Yes,
it affected
it did.
Your district in particular, because Francis Howell is in part of your district.
Right.
It's kind of, as of now, I guess we're about, what, 2-3 weeks away from veto session?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. The school transfer bill that was vetoed, it, as of now, it doesn't seem like it has a great chance of being overridden. Mm-hmm. With that possibility in mind, and given that this has impacted your district, what do you want to see on that issue? And what do you want to see change for the transfer process?
Right. Yeah, that bill it passed overwhelmingly in the Senate. I think only 3 dissenting votes. But in the House, I believe it was about 20 votes short of the override threshold. I think that bill had some really good things in it. I think the idea of accrediting building by building within a school district so that a given school building within a school district, if it was performing well, there's no reason to transfer those kids, ship those kids across town to a better school. But I think we have this real epidemic of poorly performing schools throughout the particularly in the urban areas of this state, and I think we do need to do something about it. And I think the state school board acted inappropriately when they created this bizarre we're not giving it a credit. It's not accredited, but it's not accredited status for the Normandy School District, so as to avoid the transfer law. And I guess it was just this week a court decision agreed with my position there that they probably acted illegally. So it's in flux, but I think I really would look forward to working across the aisle with Democrats whose constituents are affected by the Normandy transfer issue. But it would really be helpful to have some leadership from the governor on this issue as well.
One of the things that I think is going to be an issue, depending on whatever happens in the election, is just kind of the force of the so-called conservative bloc in the Senate to be able to block legislation. I think this is particularly pertinent because there's a belief that if you winnow the conservative faction down to 1 or 2, it may be easier to pass something like Medicaid expansion or some form of Medicaid expansion.
Right.
We've talked a little bit about
this
before,
yeah.
But there has been some thought that you may play a role in the Medicaid expansion issue. What's kind of your take on that, and also the Medicaid quote-unquote reform issue that people like Senator Ryan Silvey and Representative Jay Barnes have put forward, especially since you
right,
are
as a
medical
physician.
Doc.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Medicaid, there's no question that no one knows better than a physician that Medicaid in Missouri and elsewhere in the country is a broken system. We give Medicaid recipients a card essentially that says all the health care you want free, and then they try to get care, and it's very difficult. And in theory, having that card should allow those folks to avail themselves of primary care and stay out of emergency rooms. But we know from the recent Oregon study that that's not what happens. It's quite the opposite. So we need serious reform of Medicaid.
Can you be specific? I mean, what are some things that you would do?
I think that we need to develop a system that where Medicaid patients have some sort of skin in the game. To some extent, they become healthcare consumers.
So you mean like some sort of co-payments?
So things like co-payments and deductibles and so on. Of course, folks who qualify for Medicaid are poor, so you know they've got to be very reasonable. But we've got to put in the and this goes throughout our healthcare system too, not just Medicaid. But when you separate the payer of healthcare from the consumer of healthcare, and the consumer of healthcare has no skin in the game, you tend to get over utilization. And again, especially if things like emergency rooms, which are not the best way to deliver care to begin with. So I think healthcare homes, some co-pays, maybe a health savings account out of which those co-pays could be paid, and just incentives for wellness are just some things we could look at.
Now in Missouri, which has one of the lowest
thresholds
in the country, basically, if someone makes $2,400 a year, they don't qualify. So right. I mean, so how would they be able? I mean, I'm just playing
right.
devil's advocate.
Right.
Here.
I think we do need to look at eligibility levels as well.
So what? Yeah. What raising but again, eligibility?
Well,
but
no,
putting
yeah,
in
no. But I would say with regard to the copays, I think some sort of a health savings account. So there was a sense that the Medicaid patient was spending their own money when they say. Go uh-huh. to the emergency room that has X copay versus go to a primary care doctor where the copay is a tenth of X.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you didn't really give a firm commitment when you were talking to me that you're going to basically replace John Lamping as the conservative, you know, blocker of things. You're probably going to be a little more open-minded to
yeah.
different things.
Yeah, and you alluded to Senator Sylvie and Representative Barnes' legislation, and I'm not intimately familiar with those. There's no question those bills. There's no question that a full-blown Jay Nixon or Barack Obama take the money and run approach I cannot support. But I think we need to have all the options on the table.
How do you think the Senate will be in 2015? So it's still going to be Republican, obviously, but it's always been kind of factionalized since the supermajority
sure.
happened. Do you expect that to continue, or what do you think happens there?
Yeah. I think the Senate's an interesting place, and a lot of what goes on in the Senate has to do with the personalities and the relationships between people in the Senate. I'm not as intimately familiar with those relationships and those personalities as I'm sure I will be a year from now. But I do think the Senate it can be a place where things are very. Fractious, but I also think it's a place where folks can work together in a bipartisan way and get things done.
Joe, you wanted to get into St. Charles
yeah,
issues.
Now,
yes.
Yeah. What are the particular issues that you're going to be pushing for St. Charles, which is, frankly, you know, increasingly a more influential player
right.
in Jefferson City because it's where people are moving.
Right, right. Well, I think the issues in St. Charles County are much like the issues across the state. Missouri could be doing better. Missouri is 47th out of 50 in economic growth over the past 15 years. St. Charles County, of course, is more prosperous than many areas in the state. But I think I think creating policies that will promote job creation, promote prosperity.
Examples.
Yeah. Well, I think that the legislature was off to a good start last year with the tax reform bill. It was quite a modest tax reform bill, but I think that's a step in the right direction.
Would you like to see lower income taxes and higher sales taxes, or how
yeah,
would you
well,
like to see?
Yeah, the problem with that, many times, tax reformers have advocated for moving away from a production tax and income tax and toward a consumption
right.
tax. And in broadly speaking, I'd be in favor of that approach, except in Missouri, we already have very high sales tax. We have so many exemptions to the sales tax that the sales tax is quite high. Of course, if the transportation tax had passed, we'd be 0.75% even higher.
It did not pass,
by
the way.
It, of course, did not, yes. Yeah. But I think another place to look, though, is that Missouri has very, very expansive tax credit programs. And I think if those could be scaled back, we could afford some reduction in the overall tax rates for all Missourians.
Now, you and the governor will actually be on the same side.
That is true.
As far as the tax credit program.
That is true. Yeah, that is true. The governor has been an advocate of tax credit reform.
So the other thing that I think was kind of an interesting crevice in your race is St. Charles County is becoming kind of a mini hotbed of union activity, mainly because a lot of people from North St. Louis County have moved there. And I don't think they got really behind you at all.
No, the unions didn't do so well in St. Charles County on August 5th. The unions supported Vicki Schneider in my race, and I had 64%, she had 20%. They supported someone named Mike Swires over Kurt Barr, and Kurt beat Mike 2-1. So there were a couple of other races where they got involved. So I and Representative Barr are in favor of right to work. I think that is a reform that we need to move Missouri forward. And the unions certainly don't agree with me on that one.
But I think it stands to reason because we saw this, I think, this year when they tried to pass it through the House. They didn't get enough votes.
That's true.
Even if they got it through the House, getting it through the Senate seems like an awfully tough prospect at this point, especially
because
with the Democratic
filibuster.
Governor
yeah,
and the filibuster.
The filibuster and the Democratic governor, of course. Realistically, of course, the legislature could put right to work on the ballot without the governor's signature.
Would you advocate that?
You know, that's really more of a strategic decision. That's something you'd want to look at polling. It is my understanding that some of the early polling in the right to work debate this last session was that right to work, if the election were held on the day the poll was held, it would have passed. Of course, the unions would be very energized and mobilized to try to defeat it. So I think the more straightforward way is to have a Republican governor sign
it. Is there any of the Republicans? I mean, right now we've got only one announced, Catherine Hanaway.
Right.
You've got State Auditor Tom Schweik, who is seriously looking at it. And then you've got some people like Blaine Lunkemeyer who are being encouraged. Is there anybody who you're encouraging?
Well, I know all three of those folks. They're all great public servants. I think any one of them would be a vast improvement over Governor Jay Nixon, but I haven't taken a position in the governor's race.
Do you think that, you know, you actually were in the legislature when Chris Koster was a Republican?
Yes.
Briefly. And
he's now the Attorney
he's
General.
He's now the Attorney General.
And a Democrat running for
likely
governor
candidate. A lot of Republicans criticize him for various things. They don't like the fact they switched parties, but I think few people would say that he's not a formidable candidate. What do you think is going to take for any of those Republican candidates to win the governor's mansion back, given that he's a great fundraiser, he has a great speaking voice, and he's been a statewide official for 6 or 7 years now, so he has some name recognition. What's it going to take to beat him?
Yeah, no, you're right, Jason. All of those things make the Chris Koster a pretty formidable
especially
candidate.
Especially the speaking voice, by the way.
And yes, but the and. One thing that would really help is if the Republican Party could unite behind a candidate early and avoid a primary, because you alluded to Chris Koster's fundraising ability. The worst thing that could happen to my party would be a knockdown, drag-out primary in which a lot of Republican dollars get spent and then go into the general election underfunded against
a candidate. What do you think the likelihood of that is, of uniting behind one candidate early on?
I'm not sure at this point. I sure hope we can do it.
It is August 2014, so I guess there's still time.
A little bit of time.
Sarcasm, did we?
Yeah, there's a little bit of time.
All right, I'm going to close this off here. We all have a lot of work to get back to doing, unfortunately.
And you have a lot of allergies to clear.
I do.
My allergies have been terrible, by the way.
It's ragweed now.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I'm an allergy-like magnet.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So. I'm sure all of our listeners care deeply about our allergies.
They can hear it in our voice, I'm sure.
Yes.
But to close this out here, you can read all of our stories at stlpublicradio.org. You can follow me on Twitter at @CSMcDaniel. Jason?
J. Rosenbaum.
Joe?
J. Manis. That's J-M-A-N-N-I-E-S.
And you?
And AndersForSenate.com.
Very good. We'll be back next week. Until then, so long.
So long.
Thanks.